Good afternoon, and welcome to the live book business webinar, The Digital Integration, Your Content Anywhere, in Any Format, Anytime. My father always told me it's best to start off a presentation or a panel with a joke, but as many times as I've tried, I cannot come up with a joke about XML or metadata or workflow processes. So if anyone has one, feel free to submit it in the Ask a Question box now. I'll be happy to share it. PG rated only, of course. Depending on how funny it is. Lack of joking aside, thank you for joining us today. We have a really exciting and informative webinar, which we were able to bring to you thanks to Really Strategies, our webinar sponsor. Really Strategies accelerates publishers' revenue and profit growth through better content management. Since 2000, Really Strategies has provided award-winning content solutions and services to publishers, media companies, and other content-centric companies. From content creation to delivery, Really Strategies helps bring strategy, content, and technology together to analyze, architect, and implement appropriate tools and technologies. I'm Noelle Skadinsky, Editorial Director of Book Business and the host of today's event. We have an exciting presentation for you, and we'll be talking about one of the most challenging aspects of publishing today, finding the best way to streamline workflow processes and efficiently and successfully prepare content for multi-channel distribution. By the number of attendees that we have to today's webinars, we certainly know this is a very important topic and on the minds of many. So before we get started, I have to point out a few tips on how you can make the most of today's webinar. So first, if you're having any technical difficulties, you can click on the Help button. It's at the bottom of your console. Or you can let us know by submitting a question in Ask a Question box. Second, make sure that you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can take part in the interactive portions of today's presentation. And we do have a couple of polls today, so please make sure that you do this or you'll miss them. If you want to get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, you can click the Download Slides button on the console. And if you want to share the webinar with your peers during the webinar, you can send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the Invite a Colleague button. And at any time, you can give us your feedback on the webinar by clicking the Survey button, and we'll also distribute the survey at the end of the webinar. And today's speakers will be answering questions at the end of the presentation from the audience. And while we'll be waiting to answer them until the end, you can submit a question at any time during the event using the Ask a Question box. And if you have a question for a specific speaker, it'll be helpful if you specify, you know, who the speaker is that you wanted to ask. And if you have to leave the presentation at any time, you can access the webinar on demand for the next 90 days via the same link that you used to watch it today. And then after that, it'll be archived on the Book Business website at bookbusinessmag.com/webinar. I know my own URL. So, okay, now to the good stuff. Here to discuss the digital integration, we have Bill Trippi, Vice President and Lead Analyst, Content Strategies for the Gilbane Group, a division of Outsell, Inc. It provides analyst and consulting services focused on content technologies, whether it involves web content management, multilingual content, enterprise search, enterprise social media, publishing, XML, XBRL, or related technologies. It aims to help its clients make vendor-neutral, well-informed decisions. And we also are pleased to have Stephen Driver, who is Vice President of Production Services for Roman Littlefield Publishing Group. The Roman and Littlefield Publishing Group production services staff is located in Lanham, Maryland, Blue Ridge Summit, Pennsylvania, and Boulder, Colorado. The department, which includes design, composition services, production, and manufacturing, oversees all phases of production for approximately 1,400 front list titles and 700 reprints each year. Stephen, who joined the Roman and Littlefield Publishing Group in 1998, is obviously the Vice President of Production Services and oversees a staff of 41. So very quickly, before I introduce our first speaker, we wanted to conduct a brief survey of the audience to help our speakers understand the range of executives in attendance and help us better address your specific needs. So you should see a poll on your screen right now. If you could take just a second to answer the poll, describing your role in the company. We'd really appreciate it. And it would kind of let us know where you're coming from, what kind of information you're looking for, and might help us tailor what we're talking about a little bit better to who we're speaking to today. So we'll give it just a second while everyone's submitting their answers, and then we'll take a look at the results, and we'll get right down to the important part, which is our speakers. Okay, so we have the results that are in. It looks like we've got the majority are production, about 25%, and almost 18% executive management. Publishers, 21%, editorial, 12%, IT, 4.4%, and other, about 20%, so a pretty good range. Okay, now for the good stuff, I'll turn things over to Bill Trippi, who will talk about current trends in publishers' workflows, where the industry is with XML adoption, overcoming barriers to entry, and more. So welcome, Bill.
Great, and thank you very much, Noelle, and hello to everyone out there. I'm really pleased to see such a great turnout for today, and I'm really looking forward to hearing from Stephen and his case study. So I just want to tell you a little bit about the comments I'm going to make, which will be pretty brief. They're all going to derive from a pretty significant study we did last year within Gilbain, which was published at the end of 2010. It was called The Blueprint for Book Publishing Transformation, Seven Essential Processes to Reinvent Publishing. And what we attempted to do, and we were really pleased with both the research and the final results, the level of involvement we got from publishers and vendors and so on, we really tried to look across the entire publishing supply chain, from the acquisition of titles through editorial production, page production, as well as digital production, manufacturing and distribution, as well as sales, marketing, and even rights and royalties activities. The question we were trying to test was, how much has digital impacted book production, and what are publishers doing to respond to the opportunities for digital revenue, e-books, and other digital platforms? So we did that along with – I worked on that along with two colleagues, David Gannett, who is actually the lead analyst on that, and Karen Golden, who helped with the research. So the numbers I'm going to share with you today and some of the insights I'm going to share with you today come from that study. So as I mentioned, we sought to identify pain points, barriers encountered by publishers when it came to the influx of digital publishing and operations. We did a number of case studies and profiles, a lot of qualitative research where we interviewed publishers at length, but we also did a web-based survey for book publishing professionals. This was published in October, and it's freely downloadable from the Gilbain website, gilbain.com. You just have to register, but it's actually freely distributable and welcome to share it within your organizations. So it's a big report. There are a lot of findings, but I'd like to kind of boil down some of them for the purpose of today's presentation, and especially as kind of a lead-in to some of the points that Stephen's going to be making. So one thing we learned, and surprisingly so, to our thinking anyway, is that XML Early is gaining significantly with all kinds of publishers. We talked to publishers across the spectrum, so STM publishers, legal, professional, trade, educational. Those of you who know the STM market wouldn't be surprised to learn that, you know, they've been at, you know, XML and digital workflows for a long time, same with legal publishing. Some of the other segments we all know have lagged a little bit, but we learned that, in fact, this idea of XML early, not necessarily having the authors do XML, but perhaps having the copy editors do XML or the production editors do XML, is really taking hold. The next point might not seem as obvious, to folks, because, you know, we're talking about digital, and then I use the word printing, but one of the things we learned and we're very impressed about was how well publishers are integrating digital printing, shorter run printing, print on demand, and how this really is a significant companion to their digital publishing activities. What we saw in many of the best situations, those publishers that have really made the most progress, are situations where at the end of the editorial and production cycle, the PDF, print-ready PDF is ready, and the ebook formats are ready, and all of the sort of major channels are ready to be fulfilled, you know, basically as soon as the book is done. And digital printing, you know, provides an important element in this in a lot of segments of publishing where you might not be doing, you know, a print run of several thousand copies at the beginning, or you might be doing a second printing or custom printing. Publishers are really making great use of this.
Bill, I'm sorry to interrupt. A couple of questions have come in. I normally don't interrupt with the questions, but I think it would help to explain. A few people wanted to see if you could give a brief explanation of what XML early is. I mean, I think a lot of people are familiar with XML first phrase that's been thrown around, but can you explain briefly what that is?
Sure. No. And interruptions, no problem. So yes, I think that, you know, O'Reilly did a great job, I guess it's almost 2 years ago, with an educational effort to introduce the idea of XML first, that as publishers, including book publishers, looked to leverage more product into digital channels, that it would make sense to be doing XML from the very earliest point in the manuscript development process. So the author uses XML encoding, or perhaps there's a template that supports kind of XML under the hood. So that's XML first. And the idea is that, you know, as soon as the manuscript is done, you know, you would be ready to leverage that into several formats. In reality, though, and especially in certain arenas like, say, trade publishing, where the author is not an employee of the company, may only be doing a single title for you, you know, might be a novelist or some kind of professional whose job doesn't involve anything like, you know, technical encoding, you're not going to ask them, you know, and we, you know, trade publishers were quite clear on this, you know. You're not going to ask that kind of independent author to do any kind of technical encoding and developing the manuscript. You're going to give them a Microsoft Word template, and you're going to be happy if they get you back the files in the format, you know, that you want. But for the most part, you're going to take the files in whatever form you get them. So what many publishers have done in order to still leverage XML as early in the process as possible is take that manuscript file once it's gone through any kind of substantive editing, and then, say, in the copy editing phase, have the copy editor, along with inserting the copy edits, insert the XML tags, or, you know, use the Word template in a way that the XML tags end up being embedded. And we're seeing this across a number of segments, but especially in trade and educational publishing. Does that answer seem to answer the question to folks' satisfaction?
I think so. Actually, we just had two questions come in. What is XML? So, I think you definitely answered the question as to, well, I guess we'll see if we have more questions from the audience on it, but I think that gives a good distinction between XML first and XML early. And probably we're going to get to XML late at some point. So for some people, I guess, who are just getting into this, XML is basically, it's, you know, an acronym for Extensible Markup Language. And, Bill, I don't know if you want to say anything else about that.
Sure. So, you know, if you think of the traditional manuscript development process, most publishers are accepting Microsoft Word files, probably in 90 or 95% of the cases. If you get into STM publishing, you might see other kinds of formats that technical authors are used to working in. And, you know, that's a, you know, Microsoft, you know, leaving aside, you know, some technical details and so on, for the most part, a Microsoft Word file is a proprietary format. It really doesn't have kind of generic encoding underneath it that says things like this is a heading, this is a byline, this is a title, you know, this is a paragraph, this is a bulleted list. You might use styles in something like Microsoft Word, but that's really a different thing. And what XML does is it basically it allows, or, you know, to look at it another way, kind of enforces a process where that kind of specific encoding is actually embedded in the file, you know, by someone like a copy editor. And the advantage to this, and why publishers are so interested in this, and why we see momentum, you know, toward XML, is if you think of, you know, the digital imperative, right? We're not just going to be producing the print book anymore, but we're going to be producing an ebook that might be in EPUB format, another ebook that might be in Kindle format, so, you know, something that might go on a web page that needs to be in HTML. The advantage of using XML is that you could produce each of these formats in an automated fashion from that single file. Sometimes you hear people talking about single source publishing. And that the idea is basically I'm going to take that single encoded file and I'm going to run some scripts or kind of style sheets on that, and I'll be able to produce the Kindle format from that. I'll be able to produce an HTML page from that. I'll be able to produce an EPUB from that, and so on. So it's basically a technical encoding process that enables this kind of multi-channel publishing that, you know, really publishers are facing as a real imperative right now. So if that's helpful, I'll keep kind of charging along.
Sure, I think go right ahead.
Okay, great. And that's actually a good segue to the next point, which is that, you know, there are multiple ebook formats, and then there's the whole issue of apps. You know, the iPad 2 was announced yesterday, and I heard, oh, I forget the numbers, but it was just spectacular. I mean, something like 100 million ebook downloads already from the iBooks store. And, you know, you hear, you know, equally sort of amazing numbers from Amazon and so forth. But, you know, it's not a uniform world. The ebook that you produce for Kindle is a physically different file from the ebook that you need to produce for the iPad. And in a way, you know, this is problematic, right? Because it would be nice if it were just a single format and everyone just took the same format. The good news is that, you know, there are vendors out there who provide very good services for this kind of thing. And if I'm not sure if Stephen's going to touch on this or not, but what a number of publishers are still doing, frankly, is not even worrying about a lot of this and just having their vendors take care of the different ebook formats at the end of the traditional print publishing process. And, of course, there's also consultants who can help with this kind of thing. And the final point, I'll only just touch on this very, very briefly and really, and only in just this slide, is, you know, this whole issue of metadata, you know, that is information about the book. So, you know, if you think of the Onyx feed, you know, elements like the ISBN, number of pages, who's the publisher, so on and so forth. What we found is that some publishers are very good at managing this kind of information. Some publishers are actually exceptional at managing this kind of information. But then there's a lot of kind of ad hoc management of this kind of thing. And if you think of that same sort of digital publishing imperative, you know, I need to get into the iBook store, I need to get onto Amazon, I need to get into Barnes & Noble, so on and so forth. Not only do you need to get your files there, but you need to get your metadata there. So that's why we looked into that at the same time. So we talked a little bit about this idea of XML early, and I hope I've made that clear for folks. We did not expect to see a majority of publishers using XML early at this stage. So we were surprised, frankly, when our results showed that 48% of the publishers we talked to indicated that they're using either XML first or XML early as their workflow. Now, bear in mind again that, you know, we did interview and poll publishers across the segment, so this includes STM and legal publishing. But we talked to a number of trade publishers who were doing XML early in their processing, including a number of the largest trade publishers. And I think, you know, the fact that this has really taken hold, clearly, I mean, 48% is significant, you know, speaks to, you know, some of the educational efforts that have gone on, like what O'Reilly did a couple of years ago. But it also really bodes well. You know, I think folks that maybe tried to do things like this 5 and 6 years ago probably were too early, you know. You know, the market wasn't quite ready for it. You know, the iPad was just introduced less than a year ago. The Kindle's now been out, what, for 3 years or 4 years. So if you came to this too early, you may have been doing a lot of work without a lot of opportunity, you know, financial opportunity. And you also may not have had enough peers doing the work at the same time you were. Well, now you have plenty of peers, and you have lots of opportunity. So we think this is really great news for publishers, including early adopters. We asked, and I'll go through these pretty quickly, because I think they're fairly self-explanatory. We asked some questions about why publishers were looking at XML, what benefits they saw from it, and also some of the barriers they saw. So we asked them about business benefits that they imagined they would get from, say, XML for title content. And, you know, the most common responses were to make publishing more flexible and efficient, which really goes right along with the next one, reusing and repurposing of content. So, again, this idea that I could produce, you know, both the iPad version of the ebook and the Kindle version of the ebook and the Barnes & Noble version of the ebook all from the same single source. The idea of creating new products and revenue streams. I mean, clearly the revenue is there now for publishers. I think that goes without, I don't need to say anything else. And then finally, again, publishing to multiple ebook formats, which we heard a lot about. We asked about the level of interest and how long they have been using XML. This is probably a little hard to see in any detail, but we were really pleased to see that this isn't, while some publishers are still quite new to this or they're not doing anything at all with XML yet or they couldn't answer the question, 45% of book publishers have been using XML for 1 or more years. So we also thought that was a very positive response. And then we asked some questions about you know, what might be slowing them down. And we asked some specific questions about, you know, storing XML in something like an XML repository or using a system such as our suite or other kind of production system that stores the XML for them. And it was really interesting. You know, we asked them, you know, what are impediments? And we sort of guessed the cost might be the biggest concern. And it is a concern. It's around 25% of the people who have not yet adopted these systems point to cost as a concern. But it was a higher percentage, almost 33%, that talked about the need for skills for expanding the knowledge about XML kind of across the publishing organization. You know, I think some of the questions we've run into today reflect that. And I think it also is a reflection of the fact that, you know, like many technologies, you know, you always have champions for the technology within an organization, you know, any kind of organization, but within publishers certainly. And then you have other folks who are kind of heads down doing their job and haven't taken the time out to look at things. So when something new comes up, they need to kind of come up a learning curve. I'll just talk just a little bit more about this idea of ebook formats and app confusion. It's not easy, you know, if you're new to this, to sort out all of the issues of, okay, you think you have an opportunity in the Apple Store, you think you have an opportunity at Barnes & Noble, at Amazon, and so on. How do you go about doing this? You know, and this is actually an area where we found that the vendors are very helpful. And for as I mentioned a slide or two ago, for some publishers who are kind of less interested in doing the technical work, there are plenty of very good vendors who can basically do the ebook work for you. So you could continue to do your publishing workflow exactly as you're doing it today, and do this kind of, you know, okay, here are my files, we're done, please create the ebook formats for me, and handle it all that way. And that's a very viable way of continuing to do the work. Okay, so I did see, okay, yeah. There was a question popped up, but I think I'll hand it back to Noelle at this point and move on to this next question.
Okay.
Excuse me, yeah, survey.
Okay, thanks, Bill. We have a ton of questions coming in, and we'll be sure to try to get to as many as we can. It's a full range of questions. If you could just bear with us, and hopefully we'll be able to get to those. Before we introduce our next speaker, we have a second poll that we want to ask you to respond to, if you would. So if you could take a second just to answer the poll that should now be appearing on your screen about at what point in your workflow do you implement XML. And if you're not using XML, there's also an option for you to choose that. We do not use XML, which I see from some of the questions that are coming in is a number of you. Someone actually asked a question about what percentage of publishers are using XML, and I believe, Bill, if I'm correct, your research said that 45% of publishers, at least that you surveyed, have been using XML for one or more years. Is that correct?
48%. Well, yeah, 45% for one or more years and 48%. Early or in the XML first or XML early.
Okay. So just get one question answered while we're letting people take the poll. So, wow, we have here 59% not using XML, 26% in post-production, almost 26.5%, and then obviously the content creation author stage and the pre-copy editing stage, so we have a lot not using it or using it later. The XML late. I don't know if that's a new phrase or not, but I think it should be. Okay, so thank you for participating in the poll. Now, if you would please welcome Stephen Driver, who's going to address workflow processes that he's implemented to streamline multi-format publishing, such as integrating XML into the workflow, the successes his department and company has had, challenges they've had and some they still have, and what you can learn from his experiences. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you. Well, hello, everyone. I'm VP of Production Services, as it says there on the slide, and one of the things that I guess I'm going to cover today is a little bit about how we address the whole XML influx from process standpoint, what it is, how we use it, that sort of thing. And in fact, as Bill alluded to, publishers are more and more kind of gravitating towards that as a way to generate all of the various files that you kind of need to in order to get to print and to the various ebook formats. So we identified early on in sort of researching this process some key ideas that we wanted to incorporate. And, you know, the O'Reilly study being really public out there, starting with XML, didn't really make much sense to us either. Primarily, Roman and Littlefield is an academic publisher, and like trade publishers and other academic publishers, authors write using Word, and you're not going to go back to that author and ask them to do a whole coding job on their manuscript. Not only will they not have the knowledge, you just wouldn't expect it to take the time that it would take to do it. So we wanted to find a way to, if not start with XML, get it into the process as quickly as possible, because it's much easier to do it at the beginning than sort of at the end. And we kind of identified that if we had this early on in the process, that it could be used to compose files faster and with greater results in terms of the varied files that you get out at the end of it. So we've looked at, what is it when you start with XML and how does it work? So essentially the question came up, how do you do it to a file? And I assume from the number of people out there that have a production background, you're familiar with the process of sort of type coding a manuscript using some sort of typesetting short tag or something like that. And XML really isn't very different from that when you get down to it. It's identifying the elements in a manuscript in such a way that a template recognizes what it's supposed to do with that element. So where you would use a traditional desktop publishing model like a Quark or an InDesign, and you might call a chapter heading a CT or a level one subhead, either an A head or a level one head, something like that. And the person that's laying that page out using Quark or InDesign knows, okay, well, that chapter title has to be 10 points centered on the page, that sort of thing. What you would do in XML, similar to that, is code it with a different code, and then the template that you apply to it explains what to do with that code. And whether that template is used for print publication or web publication doesn't really matter. You can apply different templates to the same document. And as a result of that, as you can see here from this slide, you start with this XML, and you can go out to EPUB, to PDF, to HTML, to what have you, based on the templates that you create. So we wanted to find a way to start using that Word document and get it into these various formats. And so one of the, we're currently exploring a lot of different options, and one of the options that we have is the sort of RSuite cloud approach, where you can start with the Word file. You can code it according to the normal or pretty regular standard typesetting short tags that you use now in your workflow, and then a conversion takes place. So the converter reads what those short tags are and says, okay, when I come across this particular code, I know to change that to this particular XML code. And then as a result of that, you end up with a really well-formed XML document that you can then apply those templates that I spoke about to and get the various formats out of it, whether it's a PDF or an EPUB or a MOBI file or what have you. In doing so, what we learned was we could publish titles faster as a result of starting with XML earlier in the process. So we looked at ways to do it, and as Bill suggested, there are vendors that can do this for you. You can go outside to overseas to India or to other places, and they all have their own drawbacks associated with them. And we noticed that when we tried to do things like that, we would see higher correction cycles, that didn't necessarily get all the file outputs that you wanted. If you did get an EPUB, it wasn't necessarily a valid one, so it would look terrible when it were rendered on a Kindle or an iPad in case of EPUB, or Kindle Mobi in case of the Kindle. And then, whenever you wanted to go back and fix something, you had to basically start all over and regenerate all of those files. So we started looking at a way to, as I said, start with the Word manuscripts, which we knew we were going to have and we're going to continue to have, convert that to XML, and then, through a browser approach, be able to review corrections, check out the files, protect it, and automate some of that composition. And then at the end of it, you end up with those formats that you see there, PDF, EPUB, HTML, et cetera. And so in this slide, you can kind of see what that Word manuscript would look like. And I'm sure, as I said, anybody that's in the production background kind of recognizes this sort of thing. You've got your running heads and your chapter title and your chapter number, et cetera. And these are basic short tags that are used for that, that a typesetter, a desktop typesetter, would see and know how to style that. And then in the next slide, you can see kind of compared side by side, it's basically the same coding. Again, the converter kind of reads it and says what to do with it from an Excel standpoint or from XML standpoint. And then there's a browser function. So just like you would make corrections in a Word document, in this document, you're making corrections to that text. But XML is kind of operating behind it. So, you know, you're deleting text, you're adding text, you're rewriting, you're changing heading styles, et cetera. And all the time in behind it, the XML is kind of updating. And this is kind of a screenshot of what some of the things look like in terms of managing the files and getting it ready for final output. Basically, the next step to that then is applying the template to it, you know, so saying I have this now, this XML document, and now I'm going to say I want this print PDF applied to it, and this is what you do with all of that data in that document, and that happens automatically in the system once you select the template. And as a result, you get a laid out page from that, very similar to the approach that, again, you would do with an InDesign or a Quark kind of approach. And so what the result of that was, we saw that, you know, you could get to first proofs a lot faster, the production schedule would compress, and, you know, you're automating a lot of those file outputs, and you don't necessarily have to go through and change a lot of your production processes. So just to kind of wrap it up, I think that one of the things that we also saw, kind of echoing a little bit more of what Bill was saying, we started out with that approach. You know, let's try and keep our workflow the same. Let's try and integrate and adopt XML early. And one of the things that we've seen as a result of that is not only were the production editors kind of able to handle that, but they were able to grasp the XML concept a lot quicker. So they started learning the XML codes and, you know, regularly working in the raw XML as opposed to working in a browser that sort of rendered it in that text approach. And it moves a lot faster that way. So as a result of all of those things sort of together, you have an XML file really early in the process, if not first. Again, you're not starting with the author. And then at the back end, you're publishing that file in all of the various formats that you actually need it to be without having to necessarily create multiple files or go outside to do conversions, which can be time-consuming and expensive. So I guess with that, I'll turn it back over to Noelle and see if we have any questions.
Boy, do we ever. I don't know where to begin here. Well, thank you both, and we're now going to take questions from the audience. We have a lot of questions, so we're going to get to as many as we can. They're, as I said, on a really range of levels. So I wanted to start with something that, well, first, just to explain, a few questions still came in about XML early. And basically, if I can, you know, in layman's terms, just say the way that I most easily understood it when my own company first started doing it is XML is really just it's a language like HTML that you're labeling, tagging content. If you haven't done it, it's hard to explain without seeing. I think some of the things Stephen went through really explained that. But the talking about XML early is just where you're doing it in the workflow process. So if you're doing it during content creation, that's XML first, is that, if I'm not mistaken, and then XML early would be like once the content's created, you would be doing it early in the process as opposed to after the content's all finalized and going into production and that kind of thing. So that's the end of my spiel, and I will ask the first question is, what is the advantage, in your point of view, of using XML early as opposed to late in the editorial process?
Is that for me?
Either one of you, sure.
Well, from my perspective, I think the advantage of doing it sooner rather than later is you have to code that file in some respect anyway, or style it in some fashion. So you're either using Word to impose styles, which can translate very easily into XML, or you're short tagging it for the typesetter. So really what you're doing is you're swapping one out for the other, and it doesn't really affect the workflow. It's just a matter of learning the codes themselves and how they work. So rather than doing it later, which can involve, you know, some costly, both in terms of expense and time, conversions on the back end, if you're trying to get from, say, a PDF to an XML file, or from a, you know, an InDesign file to an XML file, depending on the way you've set it up, it's either going to it may not translate as well as if you start out with it earlier in the process. You could end up with a lot of cleanup and, you know, that sort of thing.
You know, I second all of Stephen's points, and I think the other thing that we see from publishers is a desire for more control. You know, so they learn how to do this, they learn how to, you know, manipulate the files, and the files are under their control at all points, and they're not dependent upon third parties. Now, having said that, you know, some of the third parties are quite good at this kind of work, so it's, you know, both ways are viable. I think I would heed Stephen's cautions that, you know, there is always a learning curve for these vendors. They do need to kind of learn your content and your quality control standards and so on. So I think it's a question of kind of control, you know, versus you know, working with the third party.
Okay, I'm going to try to squeeze in two quick questions. Stephen, how long does it typically take to train someone to convert a Microsoft Word document to XML?
I suppose it's the question is how long does the conversion take? It depends on what you're using to do the conversion with. There's different approaches. So the R Suite conversion takes minutes once it's coded. How long does it take to actually train a staff member to use XML? It depends. We didn't really set up a sort of educational kind of approach. We didn't attend a seminar or sit down and have an instructor brought in to show them how to use it. It's kind of grown more organically out of the process where we started out with this, you know, using short tags, you know, standard typesetter codes, and then as we're editing files and making changes, it was real easy to kind of pick up and say, well, many of the XML tags are virtually the same as the standard typesetting codes. And you just kind of learn develop a best practices sort of approach to it to learn how to use the codes and when to use them and, you know, that sort of thing. So I would say it's kind of an ongoing process. And we had people that learned it very quickly in a matter of, you know, a couple of weeks and felt very comfortable in it. And then we had people that it takes a bit longer depending on, you know, how familiar they are with computers in general and you know, languages, you know, markup languages as well can have an effect on that. I mean, it's certainly, you know, someone like, say, the web guys, the staff that I had that, you know, did a lot with their own websites and things and knew HTML moved really easily into XML because it's virtually identical. But it runs a pretty good range. But as I said, it ends up being, you know, not as intimidating as you first think it will be.
Right. Okay. There's a couple questions here that are somewhat related, and then after that I want to go back to a couple of more basic questions. But one person does technical textbooks which have 60-plus style sheets and hundreds of graphics. They say, I can't wrap my brain around trying to do XML on something like that. Has anyone done anything this complex with XML? We'll start there.
I have not. We're not being a technical publisher. We don't have documents like that. So, and again, you know, I think that there are certain things that translate better than others. You know, that might be something that would require somebody a little bit more advanced in XML encoding than.
Right.
So there's a reason why educational publishers have been laggards. In some cases, wisely so. A complex textbook with a lot of, layout intensive pages, lots of graphics and things like that, does not lend itself as easily to this kind of processing that we're talking about. In our experience, educational publishers, including K through 12 and college, have tended to use XML for more kind of templated content, such as supplements, workbooks, and testing materials. And I think we're still a ways away from being able to do, very complex page designs kind of backed up with XML, although not to say nobody's doing it, because some people are, but that's certainly not the norm yet.
Okay. A related question is about children's publishers. Are the majority of publishers that are using XML mainly black and white text-based publishers children's publishers or others that are illustrated, not necessarily technical, educational, with charts and diagrams and that kind of thing. But so what's the trend there?
I would make kind of the same point. You know, if the pages are highly designed and variable, you're not going to see this kind of processing typically. But at the same time, you know, there is a market for children's books on the Kindle and on and certainly on the iPad. So publishers are looking for ways to at least get children's titles into the EPUB format, which can be very handsomely presented on an iPad or another color reader. But that doesn't mean necessarily doing it with XML early or first. That's something that you could vend and that I would look into vending, in fact.
Okay. Speaking of vending, we actually have a number of questions. What's the best way to start incorporating XML? What programs should we use? What vendors are out there that can help you with this, and what are the price ranges? I know I just threw a whole boatload of questions at you. So I guess what's the best way to start incorporating XML? Start there.
Stephen, do you want to take the first?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a lot of vendors out there that can help either start with XML or kind of get you to XML. Certainly, in my experience, I've seen that pretty much most of the larger sort of composition houses can get you into XML pretty quickly. So if you're supplying Word files to them, they can get it into an XML file and then begin typesetting it for you from the XML. And then as an output, you get your PDF, your EPUB, your XML, et cetera, to sort of store. There are additional charges for that, and they vary. I mean, it's going to depend on, what kind of volume you have and how you negotiate that price with them, that sort of thing, and where you actually go to do it, whether it's, domestic U.S. or overseas, or, how their operation is set up. But I would start with any of the, like I said, the larger sort of composition houses. There are these sort of the vendors like RSuite who are composing those files sort of on the fly for you. So if you can look into those sorts of things and, similar to what we did and try and grab a system like that that enables you to do it yourself, but through a through a vendor that's running conversions for you kind of in the background automatically.
Yeah, and I think in terms of, cost varies widely. There's open source software. There are editors out there that are, one thing to think about is sort of two or three buckets of software that sort of come into the mix here. So there are editing tools. So instead of something like Microsoft Word, you might be using an XML editor. Those XML editors can be open source. I forget whether Oxygen is open source or not, but Oxygen is a fairly popular editor out there. There's XMetal and one called Arbortext Epic Editor that are commercial products for XML editing. So that's kind of one bucket. The next bucket are the content management and workflow systems, which include systems like RSuite, but but there's also there's a system out there called Vasant, and I think that's also the company name. There's a SDL, which is a large software vendor, has a system called Contenta and another one called TriSoft, I think. Those are enterprise content management systems that manage your whole publishing workflow and store the XML for you. And then the third part of it is the page composition. And there's a whole range of options there. There's still batch composition tools out there, but there are ways now to pour XML into Adobe InDesign and into Quark, so you can still have kind of a desktop-like package or approach to doing your work. So you can spend very little and rely heavily on open source kinds of software. But if you're bringing in a whole system, if you're kind of reconfiguring a department around a whole system, which is, sounds like is what Stephen did, I mean, then you are talking about, you know, probably, you know, low to mid six figures to get that kind of system up, running, and productive for you.
Okay. Someone asked a question. What about HTML5? Do you think it will replace XML as an early markup option for publishers?
Stephen, do you want to take a crack at that?
I have no idea, actually.
Okay.
So what do you think, Bill?
Well, you know, we've been tracking it pretty closely because, Apple famously rejected Flash on the iPad, and publishers had to kind of scramble because so many of these viewers and apps were using Flash as the presentation layer. And Apple said HTML5 is going to do all that. And we agree that HTML5 is really going to be a significant boost for publishers on the presentation end. But I think it would be it really doesn't solve the sort of single source problem that we've been talking about because, you know, especially for book publishers who have a vested interest in Kindle and other, you know, the other devices, I could not predict when all of these things will intersect to make, you know, HTML5 be the one thing you need to do. So I think that for the foreseeable future, you would still need to be doing something like XML early in order to really get to all of these output formats, and at this point, I would put HTML5 as an output format.
Okay. Sort of taking a different direction. What is the return on investment for ebooks once you've either done the XML yourself or outsourced it?
Well, that's going to depend on your content, I think, largely. It's going to be different for everybody, and it depends on a large number of factors, you know, the types of books that you're doing, where you make them available, how many places you make them available, the pricing that you set it at. It really just depends on your own publishing program.
Okay.
But, I mean, to put cost to it, I mean, I think, and I'll throw some numbers out there, and, Stephen's in a much better position than a lot of publishers because they already have an automatic output to some of these ebook formats. But if I were to, say, take, you know, my PDF files today for, say, a general nonfiction book, you know, not very complex output, or, say, narrative nonfiction or fiction, I mean, I could get an ebook file made for, you know, $75 or $100. Not a single one. I'm talking about giving them a couple hundred titles at least to convert. And if you're doing three or four formats, you know, at the end of the day, you're probably talking about $200 or $300 in total outside costs for that kind of thing. You have to build in your own QA costs and things like that. And then you would have to, you know, do some projections about the sales. How quickly you would be able to leverage that inventory into the different ebook channels, and what sort of sales you would expect there. The great news is you know, if the content is unchanging and you know the book has a long shelf life, you know, once you have that ebook format, there's really no cost you know, going forward from that point on.
Okay. There's a lot of questions about EPUBs and XML. This person wants to know that your take on encryption for digital content and what programs work well with EPUBs and XML, and basically what is the process? Is XML required or beneficial in conversion for EPUBs, and how is it converted?
So you're speaking of inserting DRM into files for protecting ebooks.
Right.
You know, Adobe kind of has a standard, like an industry standard DRM protection. It depends on the way that you distribute your ebooks. So most often the sites that sell your ebook, like Amazon, for instance, or Apple, et cetera, they insert their DRM into the file to protect it from their site. So they typically they're typically asking for a DRM-free file. And if you were going to, so the only place that you'd really want to, you really need to add your own DRM would be if you were selling it through your own website. And I think, Bill, you can do that right at the EPUB stage. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and, you know, it's a great question, actually. I realize we're running late in the hour, but there's a couple of questions to tease out of there. But let me talk about DRM for a moment. So, yes, Stephen's right. I mean, if you're going through the typical retail channels, they're going to take care of DRM for you. If you're going to try to set up DRM for yourself, then PDF DRM, there's lots of options, including Adobe. But if you're thinking PDF plus EPUB for DRM and doing it yourself, Adobe remains the only game in town with their content server. What I also heard, though, was a question about converting out of, say, PDF or getting into some of these EPUB formats. And if I heard the questions correctly, if you want to think about this very simply, right, if all this XML first, last, second has confused the heck out of you, you're just thinking to yourself, I just want to find someone who's going to do this for me, then this for me, you know, your print-ready PDF represents the starting point for these third-party vendors to convert into other formats. And if you give them a collection of your print-ready PDFs and you tell them you want EPUB and Kindle format, they're going to be able to give you a price for that. So that's a very simple way of thinking about it.
Okay, we've got probably about 1.5 minutes left. Are you two both in the Q&A section?
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you wanted to take a look and maybe each pick a question. There's about there's hundreds of them in here, so I don't want to. I thought you might want to pick a good one to end with, or if you'd like, I'll just throw another one at you.
Sorry, we're scrolling.
Yeah. There's a lot. It's really overwhelming.
I can do a couple of quick answers to questions I see. Someone asked about math. Look up math ML. Someone asked about if you're in SGML today, do you have to go to XML, or has everyone who's been in XML gone to XML, who has been in SGML gone to XML? That's mixed. Some people are quite happy staying with SGML. And then I think the other question I saw kind of typically across all of the several of the questions was about how do we learn this stuff, and that's a tough one, and it goes back to one of my slides. You know, there is kind of a dearth of classroom training or even on-site training. You kind of have to find that internal champion who's going to kind of learn this and start to document it for the other editorial and production folks. You can find consultants who can help with that. We actually do some of that kind of training and consulting ourselves. But I think it really comes, think about an internal champion who's going to be that XML expert and can help the rest of the staff.
So, and I saw a question here.
Actually, I'm sorry, I lied. We don't have enough time for another one. I have to cut you off. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. They'll be stewing over what question I was going to answer.
but the nice thing is our sponsor, Really Strategies, has offered to answer any questions that we weren't able to get to. That's a lot of work for them, so we really appreciate it. They were really great questions, and I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of them. But so on behalf of Book Business, I want to thank our speakers, Bill and Stephen, for being with us today and sharing their insights, and thank our sponsor, Really Strategies, and especially thank you for attending today's webinar. So be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you would just take a minute to fill out the feedback survey that will appear on your screen, it really helps us improve our webinars for the future. And I hope to see you at the next Book Business webinar. And I also hope to see you at the Publishing Business Conference and Expo in New York in April. You'll see a special discount offer on your screen that is being offered specifically to today's webinars. So today's attendees. Thanks. That's what I get for trying to rush. Anyway, thanks, everyone. Have a great day.